You're listening to the Feed Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. Listening to the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue. How are you?
Hello. I'm all good. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Yeah.
Jolly good.
Yeah.
We've got another one of those speciality fine food fair programmes today.
We have indeed.
And, as you know, we had such a great time, and we had so many lovely people that we just have to come back and listen to some of them again, I think.
And what good fun it was. We just now, just off air, we were looking to some of the periscopes that we'd done of the show as well, which were brilliant, weren't they?
Yeah, especially sort of unboxing stuff we didn't even know what it was.
Absolutely.
And in fact, later on in the programme, we've got Popper Balls, which is one of our periscope things. So if you go onto Periscope, you'll be able to see us, me and Paul, trying to work out what a Popper Ball is.
It was hilarious, wasn't it?
Yeah, the conversation got a bit near the knuckle at some points. Obviously.
Yeah, that was you, Sue, I think.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, no.
So first off, we've got Bonnie Yao, who made these amazing Chinese sauces. Mm. And then we've got Delicious Alchemy. And we tasted some of their great cakes that they made without gluten, which is quite a tough thing to do. And they tasted fantastic. My favourite thing is black saffron.
It was interesting, wasn't it? Really interesting.
Yeah, saffron's an incredible product. I mean, they call it the king of spices, you know. And it's obviously from crocuses.
Expensive
stuff. Very, very, very expensive. Yeah. And Little Moon's mochi. So, shall we listen to those and then have a little chat after that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Some great interviews.
Let's go for it. This is the Food Talk Show, and we're at day two on the Speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016 with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hi there, Paul. I've got some satay sauce and some curry sauce in front of me, and I've also got Philip Yao. So they're his sauces, and I know that you love satay sauce in particular because you've been to Indonesia quite a bit, haven't you?
I have, and Holland. Indonesian dishes with satay sauce is a big thing in Holland, and I worked in The Hague for a while, and I'm a big fan of satay sauce, and I'm sitting here looking at a jar, two jars actually, a curry sauce and a satay sauce, and they look wonderful.
Are you going to try the satay sauce? I mean, I have to say, it is 10:30 in the morning, but that doesn't seem to bother you normally.
It is, it is.
Go on. It's spicy.
It is spicy. It's delicious.
Oh, I love that nutty stuff.
Mm.
The only thing with this, Paul, I don't know if you'd ever guess, it's actually nut free.
Well, do you know, I didn't. And when I tasted it, I didn't realise there was anything different about it.
No, I don't.
It just tasted like a normal satay sauce to me. But it's nut free, you say.
Mm.
So maybe Philip can tell us what he did to get around the nuts.
So why is it nut free? And how do you? What I think is interesting is the texture tastes nutty. It's not just the taste.
Oh, hi Paul, hi Sue. Thanks for having me on. Yes, with the sauce, what we've managed to do is to find some seeds. In this case, we've used pumpkin seeds that can deliver that texture that you would associate with a good satay sauce. After that, we worked on finding the right combination of spices that can deliver the flavour. And I think, you know, with this sauce, it's been a few years in the making, and it's come about, you know, at a simple request from a family friend to have something that's good for all the family, even though there's only one of them that's allergic to peanuts. And we're very happy with the result. You know, everybody we've tried it on have said that they love the flavour. It tastes like satay. And then when we tell them there's those nuts, you know, the surprise on their face is, you know, it never gets boring for us. It's a great to see.
Cool. You're absolutely right, Philip. I mean, the consistency is the main thing, isn't it? Because the nuts in sauce normally give it that crunchy kind of texture. So adding the pumpkin seeds has replaced that. But you can't tell. That's the interesting thing. Now, we have a jar of satay sauce here, Yao's satay sauce. Can you cook with that as well? Can you use that like as a marinade, or is it purely just an add-on sauce?
Yes, Paul. I mean, we can use that as the marinade for chicken. You can also cook with the sauce, so, and also use it as the dip. So if you have some chicken that you've already marinated and cooked, you can use the sauce itself as a dip. Or you put it in the bowl, put it next to the barbecue and then just watch it all disappear. It's a really versatile product, and it suits every situation, whether you're stir frying, whether you're baking, whether you're barbecuing.
So. You like a good barbecue, don't you, Paul?
I do indeed like a good barbecue, and I can very well see what Philip is saying about that, because it is just a nailed on satay sauce.
Hasn't got much chilli in though for me, and you know I'm a little bit sensitive to chilli. Paul just eats chillies all day long
for breakfast.
Yeah, but it's got a nice spiciness to it. It has, you know, got a nice taste.
I don't want to get this wrong, but I tell you what I got when I very first tasted it was a kind of coconutty type of feel. Is that right?
That's really funny, that, because I've just turned the thing around. It says ingredients, water, creamed coconut. There you go. See? Coconutty. Very nice indeed. And what's the ambitions for your company that you've set up? I know you've set it up with your wife.
So we originally established ourselves as primarily a producer of a range of oriental foods. And then it became apparent that there was a lot of interest in free from. So we looked at our recipes and we reformulated them to be gluten-free in the first instance. And then the whole thing kind of snowballed. So we now, our aim is to create products that fit into modern day lifestyles and modern day eating habits. So where possible, we tick all the boxes for the allergen. So we have soy-free products, nut-free, obviously, gluten-free, you know, and dairy-free. So it's been a process of discovery where we've actually found where we want to be and what we want to create from our business.
I think you nailed it earlier, Philip, when you said that the inspiration for this was a family friend who had one member that was allergic to nuts. And, of course, the beauty of all this allergy-free and gluten-free and nut-free food is it can be eaten by anybody. And that's the beauty of what you've been doing, is making food that suits everybody.
So the whole family can sit around the table,
exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's about making it all accessible. And that's really actually just the second step, because the first step was making the flavours more accessible without having to buy a takeaway and go to a restaurant and risk not really knowing what's gone into your food. One of the important ingredients that we decided to omit was actually monosodium glutamate. In reality, you know, in small quantities, it's harmless. But there is a tendency to overuse that particular ingredient in restaurants and takeaways. And we thought, well, we don't need it at all in our products, so we left it out. But it was also my own background is retailing imported products, and although they were fantastic products, lots of people came into my shop and said, yeah, I really like what you have, but I don't know how to use it.
And also there's 12 ingredients there and I can't eat 8 of them.
That's exactly it. So the first step was making it more accessible from that point of view. And then secondly, okay, well, let's look at the allergens. Let's look at the ingredients. How can we make this a clean product and make it taste as great as it does?
Pretty good effort, I think, Paul, don't you? And you need to tell us where we can find it from, Philip.
Yes, so our ranges are stocked mostly in garden centres and independent stores. We're looking to expand, so we're working with Holland & Barrett. Hopefully we'll get some listings up quite soon. Otherwise, look on Amazon, on our own website, bonnyow.co.uk.
Thank you so much for joining us, Philip. Cheers.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Paul.
Do you know what I had for breakfast this morning?
I hate to think.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
Well, I had a dip in curry sauce is what I have for breakfast.
Well, that's when you got here.
When I got here.
Yeah, well, this morning I love boiled eggs. So I normally have boiled eggs and soldiers, which I know is childish, but I love it.
Dippy soldiers.
Oh, it's a great breakfast to start with. But I had mine with gluten-free bread this morning.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm fed up with eating bread and feeling not very good afterwards. And
okay.
So I really sort of bitten the bullet and decided to just have gluten-free bread. And it was lovely. So I had boiled eggs with gluten-free bread.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, I knew we were going to meet Delicious Alchemy. And they really are into their gluten-free thing. So I want to learn a little bit more, because I'm not gluten intolerant,
right,
or anything like that. But it's definitely the bread thing. It makes me feel really sluggish as I get older. So Delicious Alchemy, we have Steph here, and she is the marketing manager, so Steph Windmill for Delicious Alchemy. Tell us all about Delicious Alchemy. You're big into oats, aren't you?
Yes, we grow our own oats. We have our own farms where we can keep control of the quality of the product, because that's really, really important. All of our products, we need them to be right. We want to make gluten-free, and we also do dairy-free. We want to make it normal, but for people who can't have that kind of thing, the food needs to taste just as good. It's not normal if it doesn't taste as good as normal products.
But the problem with gluten is it's what gives you this elasticity when you're making bread and all that sort of stuff. And all of the gluten-free breads I've tried, and also the flours I've tried. I've tried to make my own gluten-free bread because my daughter is celiac. It tends to make stuff that's crumbly because you lose that elasticity. I can't even say the word. How are you managing to overcome that? Because it's really difficult, isn't it?
It is very difficult. We make sure that, you know, we test all of our products before they go to market. We use rice flour in our bread mixes, for example, but then there's other ingredients that have to go into that to replace the gluten, which is what binds your bread together. Xanthan gum is the one that's used by most people. It's a bacterial thing from vegetable products. So it's a similar idea to gluten, but it's tolerated by a lot more people. If you've got celiac disease, you can't tolerate gluten. It destroys the inside of your intestines and can be really, really difficult for people.
Yeah, see, what we find is I thought that she was just mucking about when she was younger, but actually she's just used to get hospitalised. You know, if she had a tiny bit of wheat, it's horrible and it's dangerous, you know, for her. So it's really important that gluten-free is gluten-free for people who are celiac, isn't it? And you were saying to me about oats that actually the thing is you can use oats, but most people don't use them in the right way, and that's why celiacs can't have sort of oat, you know, products often.
Well, yeah, it's the thing with oats is they are naturally gluten-free, but the problem with mainstream oats is they're all processed in the same factory as wheat, so you've then got the issue of cross-contamination. So if you want gluten-free oats, then you have to keep them separate. You have to grow them on separate farms, so there's no chance of anything coming over with the weather, and you have to process them separately in other factories. And that's what we try and do. We grow our own we've got our own farmers that we work with, and we've got our own factory based in Sheffield where all of our food is now processed, and so we can keep full control of making sure that there's no gluten in there, less than the 20 parts per million gluten that you're allowed legally to call a product gluten-free, but also so that we can make sure our oats are top-notch and taste great.
And that must make the product much better, because actually you're not worrying about it being gluten-free. You're trying to get a pure oat product, if you know what I mean, and use the natural stuff from that, and then making sure the rest of the stuff that goes around it is gluten-free as well. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we have that control, and we because we've got our own factory, we can now say that we're dairy-free, we're nut-free, and there's no soya in the majority of our products. There's a little bit in the chocolate brownie, just for binding reasons, but we can keep so much more of those allergens out, because you do get cross-contamination. A lot of people who are intolerant to gluten also intolerant to dairy, so all of our products are gluten and dairy-free.
So what have you got in front of us? I'm Paul's eyeing these up. So it looks like we've got a little bit of Victoria sponge type cake.
Yes, that's right. We do. It's all come from a baking mix. So you get a bag of mix, and you would add either eggs, or you can use alternatives to eggs should you not be able to tolerate eggs, and then butter or dairy-free spread. So these mixes, these samples have been made up with sunflower spread to keep them dairy-free. So you've got your vanilla sponge and a chocolate brownie, both of which won a Great Taste Star last year.
Wow.
Are you going to try one of those, Paul?
I am indeed. But before I do, I want to ask Steph a question, if I may. You're providing flour and cake and mixes.
Yes.
Do you provide that on a retail basis or wholesale?
Both. Okay. So, yeah, we do go through wholesalers. We go through distributors who send it into farm shops and delis and that kind of thing. There's also a number of our products available in the supermarkets, mostly the breakfast cereals. So a wonderfully nutty granola that we've just brought out now you'll find on the free-from aisle of Sainsbury's. And our muesli and rice flake porridge are in Morrison's and Tesco's and Co-op. But the best place to get any of our products is online on our online shop, deliciousalchemy.com. 25% off at the moment on the baking mixes, alongside.
You can tell she's
baker.
A marketing manager,
can't she? She just smoothly sailed into that.
25% off, she just went like that.
Absolutely.
Are you going to try a bit of Victoria sponge? It looks, even I haven't even touched it, it looks very, very light.
It is incredibly light. Mm. Look at the consistency.
Yeah, it does look light. And lovely sort of golden colour. He's going to stuff his face again. Mm-hmm. Go on then. Now, I know that the company's been around for about 10 years, and you're really growing, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. We started off 10 years ago when our founder, Emma Killily, found out she was celiac, went around looking for things that she could eat, and didn't find very much, and what she did find was terrible. So she quit her job as a computer games designer, went back to university, studied food science and business, and set up the company. Started off supplying into supermarkets, sort of home brands type of thing, but now we've got the brand, Delicious Alchemy, and the big plan is to take over the world.
Take over the world, yeah. So that people who want to do gluten-free or have to have got some really good choices.
Well, in an ideal world, it would be on the mainstream shelves alongside everything else, so it's as normal for everybody.
I was just going to say exactly that. I just tasted that sponge cake and it's delicious.
So basically, if anybody goes onto your website, they can actually buy all these mixes and all that sort of stuff, get baking, get cooking, watch bake-offs on at the moment, get inspired and start making your own stuff that's gluten-free.
Exactly, yes. We do actually have our own gluten-free magic bake-off. We call it Gufumbo, running alongside the Great British Bake Off as well. So you can make your own creations, upload them to social media, get involved and possibly win some pretty cool prizes.
Chocolate brownie?
Oh no, you wouldn't like that, Sue. No, you wouldn't like that. No, don't worry about trying to eat any of that. No, don't. I'll look after that for you. Don't worry.
Well, Steph, thank you very much for joining us. And I'm going to nip over to your stand and get some gluten-free flour for my daughter.
Absolutely delicious. And lovely to meet you, Steph.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Paul, I wondered if you knew anything about saffron. Do you know what saffron is?
I know what it is, and I've actually got a small packet in my kitchen cupboard. And I occasionally go into the kitchen, and I open the cupboard door, and I look at it, and I go, that's worth money, that is. And then I shut the door again, because I'm not entirely sure what to do with it. Yeah.
Well, you know it's from the crocus flower, don't you? It's the sort of the little stigma stuff in the little middle bit. And the only way you can harvest it is by hand, really,
right.
And which is why it's so expensive. And sure. A lot of people say it's more expensive than gold, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the little packet I bought cost a fortune.
Yeah, and you get these tiny little threads. Mm. You do need to use them, though, because they can just go a bit...
They go off, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've framed mine.
I was wandering around the speciality fine food exhibition, and I came across this stand that has black saffron, and I'd never heard of black saffron, and I was very interested to know what it was.
Absolutely. And we've been joined by Kylie, who's from Black Saffron, and she has a little packet of it there, and I just sniffed it.
Have you? I'm going to have a sniff as well. Hi, Kylie. Can you tell me, how on earth did you get involved in saffron?
Well, my husband's family are Iranian, and so we've always had wonderful saffron in the house, and they've all grown up with it, so they do get their saffron, their very special saffron from Iran, and they use it in all their cooking, and I'm lucky enough to be able to have it regularly.
So you're saying that you want the rest of the world to enjoy what you're enjoying, essentially?
Absolutely, and I do actually, I've tried a lot of different saffrons, and I do believe this one's a little bit special.
So what do you use it for? I mean, Paul's got a packet in his cupboard that he looks at. I mean, what would you... I mean, I know what I would use it for, but Paul doesn't really cook properly, I don't think. What would you use it in your household?
The lovely thing about saffron is it is fabulous for sweet and savoury foods. In Persian cooking, it's wonderful in their stews. They call khuresh. It's wonderful on rice, gives a wonderful flavour, aroma, depth of colour as well to dishes. I have a really nice recipe for chicken. It's with tarragon, saffron, garlic, just with chicken strips, and it's so easy, and it just makes that dish a little bit more special. It's fabulous with fish because it's such a delicate flavour and aroma as well. It goes beautifully with fish. And it's lovely in cakes. It's lovely in ice cream.
See, I use it for paella. For me, it brings out the flavour of the fish beautifully. And what is it about the colour? There's something about the colour that leaches out of saffron, which is quite magical.
The colour? Well, I think it just gives that extra dimension to meals. It makes it feel homely, makes it feel special. What's absolutely delightful is that it's good for you as well. There's some new research come out that it's fabulous in those deep, dark winter months. It makes you feel good. It's been used, they're doing a study and a trial as an antidepressant. It's got mood-lifting benefits. I think it's sunshine in a cup, if you like it.
I was going to say it's sunshine, isn't it? And saffron is the colour and the taste. Can you describe the taste? How would you describe it? It's quite difficult.
It's got a very delicate flavour, but also you can't miss it. It's very distinctive. It's a very earthy flavour that it can bring out in dishes. And it just complements meats really well. It shouldn't stay in your cupboard. You have to get it out.
She's telling you off, Paul.
I know. Do you reckon I can get her to come and cook me something with it?
I think so.
I'm interested now because Kylie's got a pack of saffron in front of her, and it is a deep, deep, dark red colour.
Yes.
So I'm interested to know a bit more about that because the saffron I've got in my cupboard is not that colour. So can you tell us a little bit about the saffron that you've got here?
Saffron... there are various grades of saffron, and each country does have its own grading system. I will say on the outset, it's very important to have the ISO stamp of approval. It's the ISO 3632, and that just ensures that it is pure saffron and it hasn't been tampered with in any way. Our saffron is Sargol saffron. It is the premium grade of saffron from Iran, and it is literally the end of the stamen, or the stigma, that comes from the crocus flower, and it is literally the most concentrated area from the stigma that you can take all the benefits from the saffron from. It's, as you said, it's all picked by hand. It's all dried naturally and packaged in a way in which it can. It has to be kept in a very dark and protected from the air so that it doesn't degrade. So it does have a long shelf life, actually. It should last for up to 3 years.
I suspect that Paul's has been in there 33 years, so that's why I was saying that. And it will be in the dark, because most of his food is in the dark.
It is, actually, yeah.
That's fine.
So I'm interested, I don't know if you know this, Kylie, if you can tell us. We have a packet here, which is, what, about an inch and a half by an inch, and it's three quarters full of saffron. Would you have any idea how many croci, or crocuses, it would take to make that amount of saffron?
Do you know, there are three stigmas in each flower. So you will get three strands from each flower. I haven't counted how many are in this little 1 gram packet, but I would say there's well over 300 probably. So it's a lot of handwork involved in picking that many flowers. And also they have to be very careful. It's very particular. They have to pick the stigma when the flower first opens. And it's a very, you have to be very timely and have great work.
And do you know, in this area of Iran where this comes from, are these wild croci? Are they farmed crocus?
They're farmed. So the wonderful region where it comes from, it's a particular microclimate that it grows incredibly well. And yes, but definitely it has to be farmed and organised.
Is it croci or crocuses?
I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
It just sounded good.
The smell of this is so earthy. And I have bought saffron over the years, and often I'm a little bit disappointed because I don't think it's a high enough grade that you're talking about. This smells lovely, and I can just imagine it in a casserole or a paella or something. It's just got that lovely smell. Where can we buy your black saffron from, and how much is it? I mean, it's obviously a premium product.
Yes. We are going to be supplying Fortnum & Mason's, so you can find it there. You can also find it at our own website, which is www.blacksaffron.co.uk. Get in touch with us, and we'll be more than happy to fill you in on any more details that you might like, and you can place an order directly through with us as well.
Excellent. That's inspired me to do a little bit of sort of cooking with some saffron, especially as we're heading towards the winter. You know, some really nice sort of stews or something
some?
With that on. Yeah, I might do.
I've got some in my cupboard you can buy.
Oh, not inviting yours. I want the black saffron. That's really great. Thank you, Kylie. So don't forget, it's blacksaffron.co.uk if you want to get hold of some. Thank you, Kylie.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
And I'm joined by Lucy as the co-presenter, and we've got Howard that's joined us from Little Moons.
It's ice cream, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called Mochi Ice Cream. What they are, essentially bite-sized balls of super premium ice cream that are wrapped in Japanese mochi. It's a product that's been really popular in Asia for thousands of years, and we're sort of innovating it and taking it to Europe.
Oh.
Okay, so for those of us that don't know, which is me.
And me.
And you. tell us what mochi actually is.
Okay, so mochi is originally from Japan, and it's been eaten for thousands of years. What it is glutinous rice flour that's been steamed and beaten until it gets a really soft and chewy texture, which is what it's famous for. So it's naturally gluten-free, and it's delicious.
Okay, and what's it been used for over the last thousand years until you came up with the idea of doing this?
Well, typically it's filled with sweet red bean paste known as anko. So that's very popular in Asia, but in the UK it's slightly less, it's more of an acquired taste. So what we're doing is filling it with innovative flavours like gelato and chocolate ganache, cheesecakes, and yeah, it's doing really well.
Cool.
What gave you the idea to do this with it?
Well, our parents have been making traditional mochi for about 30 years, and my sister and I, who are co-founders, we both founded this business. We knew there was an opportunity with mochi. I mean, it's such an amazing product. I think it was only a matter of time until more people knew about it. And the ice cream idea came from just sort of traveling around the world and seeing how other people do stuff. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So we've got four pieces here in front of us. Howard, just explain, because it looks fabulous in terms of its presentation, and it's quite warm in here, but the ice cream hasn't got all melty yet.
It's normal ice cream, so it's small batch gelato. It's just a bit strange because no one's used to seeing ice cream presented in balls before. Normally, you get it in a cone, or you see it in a tub, and so that's really the unique selling point about it, is that you can pop one out the freezer and just have a piece like you have a piece of chocolate. Which is actually really on trend, because a lot of people are becoming increasingly health conscious, and they're not just interested in healthier formulations of ice cream, they're also looking at healthier portion sizes. Yep. So after dinner, if you want something delicious and sweet but you don't want to indulge in a whole tub, this is kind of the perfect product, which is why I think we're the best-selling ice cream in Whole Foods since we launched that.
That's cool.
I'm going to try one.
I was going to say, I'm holding Lucy back because they're on my side of the table.
I'm edging further and further towards them. That's it, thank you.
So why don't you give it a go, Lucy?
I will do.
And while you're trying it, I'm going to talk to Howard about the business. So Howard, how long have you been doing this?
We founded the business about 5 years ago now, so quite a while. We have been selling to restaurants for most of that time. So we supply Yo Sushi and Wagamama's. We've got to the stage where I think we're selling about 10 million pieces a year now, but we knew there was an opportunity to sell this in a grocery format. We started selling last year, and as I mentioned earlier, we're now Whole Foods' best-selling ice cream, and we're here today to expand distribution.
That's a fantastic achievement, and without being rude, you look quite a young man.
I do look very young, but I'm actually 31.
Now that's young, trust me.
How old are you, Paul?
Well, he's the same age as my son, so that will tell you. So he's just a kid, as far as I'm concerned.
It's the special mochi which gives the youthful complexion to the skin, I think. Yeah, right, so eat more.
I'll just
take
that then.
Oh, I like that. That's clever. That's clever.
This isn't going to the watchdog, yeah.
I think that's absolutely delicious, and it reminds me of something, and I can't think what.
I can't either.
Maybe I've eaten them before. That could be it, because I'm a bit of a Wagamama's nut, and I've eaten most of the things that Wagamama's have on their menu. So it could be that I've eaten them before.
Most probably, yeah.
Yeah, but I love it. I love it. I love
it. I'm going to have another one.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's cheating. You're expanding the business now, and you're trying to roll out into different ways. How's that going?
It's going really, really well. I mean, 50% of our sales are to Europe, and we're selling across. We also just got a whole container delivered to Saudi Arabia. So I think there's still a lot of growth to go. Most people you meet haven't even heard of the product yet, but once they try it, you tend to convert a lot of people. So hopefully I think we're just at the beginning of our journey.
Presumably selling, especially to Saudi and places like that, presumably you're selling these as frozen products.
We are. So frozen containers. Logistically, it's a bit more much more difficult than ambient, to be honest. But it's going all right so far.
Good. Well, they absolutely taste delicious. Oh, look, there's only one left. What happened there?
You better have that one.
Oh, shall I?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind.
I'm generous, aren't I? So can anyone just buy these online? Or?
At the moment, we're listed at Whole Foods as Nature Intended, Partridges, and we've just launched in Ocado. So we'll be available to order from the comfort of your home from about 2 weeks' time, mid-September.
That's brilliant. So that's mid-September, Ocado. Brilliant. Thanks very much for joining us.
Fantastic, Howard. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Oh, they were nice.
Four really good interviews there.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, on Twitter, the lovely people at Delicious Alchemy have all gathered around the radio to listen, and
cool.
We love their cakes. If you're gluten intolerant or celiac, or you've got people in your family who are trying to cut down on wheat, get that stuff in.
Or indeed none of those things.
Or none of those things, just because
they were just nice.
It's just lovely anyway. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So next up, we've got I've got four really, really good ones here. I enjoyed all these. Roots Collective of just amazing vegetable blends from Scotland, and that product's going to be everywhere because everybody at the fine food, you know, specialty fair was queuing up at that stand because it was so amazing. Do you remember those?
I do, and I remember I actually drank them, and I don't normally like things like that.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed them. Yeah.
We've then got the slightly bonkers Miss Miller's marshmallows. Mm-hmm. Do you remember them?
I do.
Forgotten about those.
They were quite special too.
And then I have an apology to Jerome of Fruity because we thought we might squeeze him in last week. So I'm sorry about that, Jerome. But you're definitely on this week with your fruity teas. And then Popper Balls. Definitely get on to Periscope and watch me and Paul fathom out Popper Balls. Very good.
Popper Balls were fun, weren't they?
They were really good. Yeah. Should we start off with Roots Collective?
Let's go with it.
Yeah. Paul, I've been wandering around today, and we've obviously been sitting down a lot and eating, but I've been wandering around quite a lot, so have you. I saw you down at the Japanese stand at Speciality and Fine Food in Olympia. There's some amazing things in there, which I didn't even know what they are. Some incredible stuff.
I've seen some really strange things as well.
So I'm wandering around, and one of the stands here in particular has been absolutely jam-packed the whole time. Mm. I don't know if you've managed to get around there. And it's this company that's doing really incredible, I don't know what you call them, not really smoothies. I'm going to ask Susie in a minute because she owns the company and she's here. But it's jam-packed and people are really, really interested. And so many of the products here are a little bit me too, I think. They're great, but there's, you know, lots
Loads
of teas, loads of chocolates. Haven't seen anything like this at the exhibition at all.
No, absolutely. And Susie's just decanted some of her products into a row of little cups in front of me, and I'm getting wafts.
You're getting wafts.
I'm getting wafts.
Oh, yeah. The company's called Roots Collective, and the problem that I have is I really like things like carrot juice and beetroot juice a lot. I use that a lot. But with carrot juice, you'll often get it and beetroot juice topped up with apple juice and topped up with fruit juices. Not a single one of these has got any fruit juice in it, has it, Susie?
No, thanks, Sue. That's absolutely correct. We have developed a range of five different products here, and we use no fruit juice at all. So we've really targeted that alternative market. And, you know, it's interesting you say you really don't know what to call them. We had exactly the same problem, and you know, we challenged ourselves and many other people, and we've come up with the name Blends, because effectively that's what we're doing. We're blending vegetable juice and whole vegetables with herbs and spices, a little bit of honey, some coconut milk, and we've actually got a vegetable drink or snack or something you can cook with that really is, as Paul's saying, very, very fresh. He's obviously getting the smells of them, and hopefully it's making him salivate and ready to try them. But, you know, we're new. We just launched this weekend, so it's generating a lot of interest.
I used to make my own, sort of vegetable juices because you couldn't buy any. Mm. And this is as if I've made it. Is
Hold on, she started drinking it already.
I've been at a stand for the last 2 days, whenever I'm thirsty. So
what was your motivation for making these?
Well, we've actually a vegetable business at heart. So we've been a vegetable business growing veg in the UK for 40 years. And, well, thank you. But basically, we were at a point where we said, you know, we wanted to look at better uses for our waste product. And this was the route we went down, trying to develop a drink or a snack. And it's actually very, very difficult to do that, to get the flavour profile as you would like it to be. And from going from a waste product, we've actually developed what's turned to be a premium product and using premium product in the process. So it hasn't quite evolved as we had hoped to be 18 months ago, but what we have now is something that, you know, we really feel proud of and has got a fantastic flavour. So
let's have a look at some of the ones here. We've got Garden Greens, and that one's, you've called them a blend, which I think is a really good description, actually. And that's cucumber, peas, kale and mint. Next to that, we've got cucumber, spinach, parsley and chives. And then we've got beetroot, red pepper, honey and lime, carrot, ginger, and we've got spinach, coriander. So, I mean, these are so good for you, Paul, really.
You missed that one?
Oh, Asian sling. Spinach, coriander, chili and lemongrass. Chili. You're going to like that
chili.
One. Yeah, yeah.
I like a bit of chili.
I can't actually... I've tried them all. Try some, Paul, while I'm talking. I've tried them all and I really like all of them, I have to say.
I'm going to try the sweet beets first.
Beetroot. Beetroot's really good for you. Beautiful colour, of course, beetroot.
That does not taste as I expected it to taste.
Does it not?
No.
What did you think?
Well, I was quite wary at first. I do like beetroot, but beetroot has quite a pungent taste. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll get that over with first, because I'm not going to like that.
But
actually, it's very pleasant. It's very pleasant.
Good, isn't
it? And it doesn't have a full-on beetroot flavour. It's clearly beetroot, but it doesn't have a full-on smack-you-in-the-face beetroot flavour.
While he's working his way through them all, because I've actually worked my way through them already, what would you recommend to people in terms of health, in terms of drinking these? Is this something you should have one of these a day, or what's your sort of recommendation?
Well, I'm selling them. I'm very happy if you'd have five a day, quite frankly, and you would get your five a day from doing so. But we, you know, these are going to be super healthy for you as a breakfast replacement, a mid-morning snack, pre-gym. And they're so versatile. You can actually cook with them or use them as dressings, soups. In fact, one of our chefs has actually made an ice cream out of the carrot product with some mango. So, you know, although they are in a bottle and ready to drink, the versatility is huge with them, and the range of things people can do and when they drink them. Paul's just tied the Asian one and there's a big smile on his face, which I'm delighted to see.
So what you're saying is, because it's literally a blend of vegetables, you could almost make sauces, soups or anything out of them.
Well, absolutely. We've made some amazing risottos with them. We've used them to make the beetroot one. We've actually made an oatmeal porridge with apple. And again, it's a super dressing for salads. And, you know, an Asian sling is a great sort of curry sauce, mild curry sauce. And you know, straight as they are, as a gazpacho.
I enjoyed all of them. Those were my two favourites, which was the pea and mint, and
fresh,
I think it's,
it?
Yeah,
very
and kale.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I made myself kale crisps last night, so
yeah.
That would have gone nicely
yeah.
with that. And and of course the Asian sling obviously, because it's got chili in it, and I'll eat anything with chili in it. I'll drink anything with chili in it, and I really particularly enjoyed those two.
Yeah. I think you've got a marketing challenge here, actually, because it's difficult to explain what it is. And obviously, we're on the radio, so you can't see the beautiful colours that they are. The packaging's great.
It is.
But there is a bit of a marketing challenge. And we've come across that a few times, haven't we, Paul, where
yeah.
people have said, oh, I've got this product. I don't know whether it should be in the alcohol aisle because it's got alcohol in it, or in the ice cream aisle because it's ice cream, because it's not really one of those things. It's a combination of those things. And it's a question of where you get those situated when you get sort of listed and stuff.
My belief at the moment is these sit probably most naturally for the consumer in the to-go section, you know, but I do think there is an opportunity for them to go in other places, but in the first instance, most definitely, they are a small size, you know, they are a single serving size, so I think that's their natural fitting, you know, with sandwiches and any other sort of food on the move type product range.
Can I be really, really brutally honest here? It's not the kind of thing I would have walked in and bought in a shop.
That's because it's healthy, Paul, and you don't buy healthy stuff.
They don't sell it in the kebab van. I know. But having tried them, I absolutely loved it. And it just shows you that you maybe, with some of us, have got a little bit of a journey to get people to try it. But once they've tried it, I think you're home and dry.
Well, I'm really impressed. I am going to go onto the website and I'm going to order a whole batch. Do they keep for long? Can I freeze them?
They're not freeze-stable, but they're certainly cook-stable. You should, on the website, get at least 14-day shelf life on them, if not more. But yes, they have a nice, healthy, sensible, fresh shelf life.
And I can just go onto the website and order online at the moment, although I don't think it's going to be very long because they're going to be all over the supermarkets, I'm sure.
Yes, that's it. At the moment, we are just online. And hopefully, you know, maybe Paul's kebab van will take them on after his pop for them earlier, but, you know...
I'm going to have a word.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody needs to stop them where I shop regularly.
That's really going to work. Susie, really good luck with it. All the people in your stand are lovely and very passionate, and I'm sure it's going to be a great success. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you, and I really appreciate it.
Been eating all sorts of things today. Not quite as varied as yesterday, but all sorts of things. And now I'm going to have marshmallows.
Absolutely, and why not? They look fabulous. I was just looking at the packaging of this. Marvellous marshmallows. Miss Miller's Marvellous Marshmallows. Lovely retro packaging. Really liking the look of it.
The thing is, do you know what I remember marshmallows, though? That they're sort of round and they're squidgy. And like when you squeeze them, they've got like a texture of ceiling tiles. And I've never really liked them because they don't really taste of anything.
No,
weird.
And you used to buy them and put them on a stick to toast them. And they just drip off like melting polystyrene tiles, basically.
So we've got Adele Wilkinson with us. And what on earth made you think about making marshmallows when really it's sort of like an almost forgotten delicacy, isn't it?
It is. It was completely by accident, actually. A local calf came to us and said, "We are sick to death of cupcakes and brownies. Can you make mallows?" And we were like, "Why on earth would we? You know, they're pink and white and dry and horrible." And then we kind of went away and we kind of went, you know, let's do something with this. Let's make this fun. Let's make this different. Let's get rid of all the things we hate and add some fun into it.
So we've got a little box here, and it says sort of artisan marshmallows, and this particular one's the coconut and lime. You've got lots of different flavours, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got 14 standard flavours, which we kind of had to stop at because we got a little bit carried away. But we were also working on an alcohol range, which never seemed to really make it to standard. Can't think why. And then, of course, we've got a Christmas selection as well. I feel like I'm cheating on my grandma because we do a mince pie, and it shouldn't work. It so works, but you know, it's knowing when to stop, to be quite honest.
So exactly what is a marshmallow? What is it? What does it contain? What is it?
So it's a mixture of things, really. It's sugar.
Candy floss. It's one of those weird things from childhood.
Yeah, most definitely. Sugar, a little bit of gelatin in there, and then whatever purees and pastes and things. We use a lot of natural extracts and things like that just to add all the flavours to them.
They have a consistency all of their own, though, don't they, Marshall?
Yeah, they do. Many, many years ago, I lived in the US, and there was this huge, huge thing about toasting marshmallows. But the marshmallows that you got in the US were very different to the kind of things that you bought here. As you said, the kind of round, non-entity things.
So this is a block of marshmallows, and they're cut into eight. Go on, then. I'll just shove that in. And I've just picked one up, and you forget how soft and fluffy they are. Mm. They've got a texture all of their own as well.
Yes, but this one's got substance. There's a lot of substance to this, if you know what I mean.
It's very, very light. Well, I remember eating marshmallows, and always like, chewy and gooey. These aren't at all, are they?
Because the other way of consuming marshmallow is in those little chocolatey round cake things.
Or on hot chocolate, that's another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it lovely? And it's sort of almost like got a strata to it, you know, sort of like, how to explain it?
Okay, so the marshmallow itself, this particular flavour, when we make it, we add fresh cream coconut into the mix to give it the coconut taste. But then these ones are also draped in toasted coconut, desiccated coconut. But some of our other flavours, we infuse flavours into them, like our mochaccino. We work with a local coffee supplier as well. We infuse their coffee into the marshmallow. We top with a chocolate. We drizzle it with things. We top with coffee with a chocolate that contains fresh ground coffee in. So every single one is so varied. You know, it mixing whether it's in it, on top of it, or crushed to give it that extra texture.
That was nice, wasn't it?
I accidentally ate the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. That's the first time I've eaten a marshmallow for a long, long time. It was even remotely edible, actually. You could definitely put that on hot chocolate. You could definitely toast a bit toasted, but that's lovely.
You could toast that properly.
We do actually have a lot of different. They're so versatile now with the different flavours. I mean, everyone from people wanting something for a traditional English tea, something to accompany, like a little selection of sweets, maybe even a dessert. They go great drizzled. Yes, you can still toast them and burn them and melt them and do whatever you want to them. But at the same time, they're almost like a more of a dessert these days. You know, they've kind of become a little bit posh, you know, because of all the natural flavours and things in them as well. They come in a variety of colours, and we can, you know, specific for events, we can colour some of them flavours up even more to fit with themes. They go great at weddings. We do a lot of country fairs and things like that where they go down an absolute storm. They look very traditional, very English, and just the part.
I think a huge amount of it, of course, is the packaging as well. It looks so enticing before you even open the package and start talking. It's so retro.
Well, I really, really wish you luck with that. I I know you're trying to get into all sorts of really well-known shops. That's why you're at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair today. So we wish you a great deal of luck with that. It's a really nice product.
Thank you so much. It is thanks to Speciality that we've met so many of these fabulous people and some of the big traders as well. So this is a direct result of last year.
So watch this space.
Definitely. Thank you.
I'm with Jerome, Jacob, and of course the lovely Paul Andrews, who's so far eaten butterscotch and what
nougat
else?
Nougat and satay sauce.
And satay sauce, yeah.
And curry.
And they've got nicely together, haven't they?
And it's not even lunchtime yet.
No, it's not even lunchtime. And we've got Jerome in front of us, and he's got something, he's called it Fruity, which is spelt P-H-R-O-O-T-I.
That's clever, that, isn't it?
It is pretty clever. And he is a fruity, fruity tea. Really, and I know he's got a lot to say about tea because you've got a real bee in your bonnet about fruit teas that you can buy in supermarkets at the moment, haven't you?
That's it. So yeah, basically it all started when we basically went for a cuppa and a catch up with an old friend called Rachel, and Rachel eats 8 portions of fruit a day, and I was on a bit of a health kick trying to cut down my caffeine, so I thought I'd try a bursting berry fruit tea in this cafe I was in. And I ordered it, and she had an English breakfast tea, which surprised me. Why didn't she have a fruit tea as well? She loves fruit. So I offered Rachel a sip, and she declined. And I said, well, why, you know, Rachel, you eat 8 portions of fruit a day. Why are you turning me down? She said, well, because it always smells fruity but doesn't taste fruity. And suddenly memories of being in my aunt's kitchen as a kid and smelling this amazing fruitiness and then it tasting really tart and not nice all came back to me. So I basically rushed down the local supermarkets and found out why this was the case, looked at all the backs of the packs, and was astounded to not find any fruit or basically just fruit peel in order to make it up to be a fruit sort of tea, as so to speak. So started thinking, well, actually, what about if this was made with tea, with fruit, and totally try and revolutionise the whole category. So yeah, fruit tea normally has hibiscus, rose hips, peelings, leaves, things like that in, whereas fruity, which is our product, is 95% to 97% dried fruit powder with a small amount of natural flavouring, just add a little bit of the extra little punch, and that's it. So simplicity is key.
So I buy those sort of fruit teas where they're in these lovely little tea bags and all that sort of stuff, and you can see things in there.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is the stuff you see in there is probably all the bits of brambles and stuff around the edges, not actually fruit. Is that what you're saying, Jerome?
Yeah, so that's exactly it. So hibiscus, rose hips, peelings. There's not actually anything necessarily wrong with those things. You know, they're not nasty ingredients. There is a lot of flavourings, artificial flavourings in these fruit teas sometimes, not all the time. But a lot of them are moving towards natural flavouring, you know, but they're fine. They're just not fruit. And I posed, pretended to be a business student in multiple Waitrose stores and asked customers why they were buying these fruit teas, and found actually that the reason they wanted it was because they mainly wanted a caffeine-free product, but they always wanted a fruity hit, and they were constantly disappointed.
I know you've got it powdered. Why specifically have you powdered rather than have lots of twigs and things in tea bags like other people have?
Yeah, so basically it's just a quicker brew time, so you often have to wait a long time for teas and things to infuse. With ours, it's literally you just got to wait, get the temperature right for your own personal taste, and it's ready to go. So that's the reason it's a powder.
And what's in this one we have in front of us? It says blackcurrants, blackberries, and blueberries.
But the one in the cup you've actually got is, so you've got the powder of blackcurrants, blackberries, and blueberries. We also do sour cherries and cranberries, which has just won a great taste award. We've been featured in Vogue as well twice. I shall just slip that in there. And you've actually got raspberries and strawberries in front of yourselves. So
can I taste that?
Absolutely.
Can I taste that?
Yeah.
It actually does taste the fruit. That definitely tastes of raspberries and strawberries. Mm. Definitely.
I don't think I realised that I was disappointed by fruit tea, but now you're talking about it, I think I am disappointed by fruit tea. I've just tasted that. It's really nice.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to give this a go, Jerome. And I really quite like your zeal and your sort of campaigning issue. How's it doing? Have you managed to get it into mainstream stores at all yet?
Yes, I'm actually delighted to announce that a year ago I won Cotswold Fair's Young Food and Drink Entrepreneur of the Year. And part of that, you win £1,000 and a year's mentoring, the CEO, Paul. Now, it's not part of the prize, but I've actually managed to turn that opportunity into another opportunity, which was we've now won a listing with Cotswold Fair. So we have access to over 1,750 independent premium retailers.
Did you have any experience in producing anything like this before then?
So I've always been a self-starter and basically worked in tea rooms for most of my teenage years. I'm 25 now, so I didn't have any experience of creating a product from scratch, but while I was at university in Sheffield, I actually took our university cycling team from a casual group of mates who didn't even have any kit to the UK's best university cycling team. We won the championship that year and established a women's team thing.
He's driven, isn't he?
Yeah. So I worked in London in advertising, so that's really where, you know, the brand, try and work on the brand quite a lot as well.
But I'm really interested in, having had this idea, where did you start? You know, what did you start? What did you go and look at? How did you go about the initial steps to saying, that doesn't taste of fruit, how do I make something that tastes of fruit? What did you do next? Did you just research the market? Or?
Well, once I worked out why, you know, it was because there wasn't fruit in it, I just started looking and trying different ways of doing the fruit. And, I've got lots of pictures ready for a book in the future, but, you know, it was sort of things just trying in your kitchen, different ways, different fruits, different types of fruits. So basically it was just trialing and testing and showing people and seeing what they think, and that was really the best way of doing it. Sneaking little samples into my office drawer in London to give to people in the kitchen and see what they thought. One in particular I gave my mum, and she said it was the most disgusting thing she'd ever had, so I quickly got rid of that technique.
Just trial and error, keep asking people, yeah. see what they say, yeah. test it.
Absolutely, and you can't beat that. That is the reality of entrepreneurship, is you try something, try again, refine it, try again. Absolutely.
I mean, perfectly honest, you can try and try and try again, but my mum's the harshest critic of them all. So now she absolutely loves all three of them. That's the best test, I think.
And what's your mum's name?
Beverly.
He's got to pass the Beverly test, everybody. If you've got a product, it's the Beverly test. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Bev's beverage test.
Well, thank you very much, Jerome. And where do we get it? Where do we go?
So fruity.com, which is PHROTI.com. Or if you're a retailer, Cotswold Fair.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm loving it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Paul, we've been here for 2 days and we've been tasting all sorts of different things, and our lovely producers and other people that we met come along, we see their products, we taste it, we have a chat. We're going to do something slightly different this time.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to unbox something.
We're going to do a bit of unboxing, because we do like a little bit of unboxing.
We do.
And I've got the lovely Jules Quinn with me.
Hello, Jules.
And she's bought her products in a box.
In a box, which is handy, really, isn't it? Because we're going to unbox
handy.
It.
It's very handy. So I have no clue what this is. I haven't been briefed beforehand, have you?
No.
Okay. So, Jules, just look pretty at the moment, because we're not going to ask you about the product. We're just going to try and work it out for ourselves. So we have a lovely box here. It can fit in my hand. It's not that big.
It's a cube.
It's a cube
about 2 inches square.
It says, pop
cubed.
A ball, one telescopic straw inside. Do you want to have a look? Strawberry flavour bubbles which burst in your mouth. And add some bursting bubbles to your drink. So,
and then round the outside it says bursting bubbles.
Okay.
Do you know what? I think it burst in bubbles.
I think so.
And there's a yellow straw
thing.
Which is a telescopic straw.
Look.
And then you expand it.
Yeah, suitable for vegetarians. Once opened, replace the lid and keep in the fridge for up to 2 weeks. Do you drink it? What is it? I don't know. Have a look.
Right.
All right. I suppose you open it.
We've got a plastic pot.
Yeah.
Full of.
Do you know what it looks like roe.
I was going to say it looks like huge caviar.
Oh yeah, it's a big caviar.
It's strawberry salmon coloured balls in a liquid. So
okay,
let's
so
take
what
the foil
it says
cover
is
off.
It says you add my bubbles to your squash, cordials, milkshakes, and cocktails.
Right.
Even use me as a topping for ice cream.
Okay.
So and you can float it in Prosecco, for example, and I presume you can eat it. Go on then, can you eat it, just in case you can't, and then you can die and I can just watch.
Okay, well, there's a straw, so yeah. I'm assuming
you
the straw...
need to stretch it.
Well, I tried and I couldn't, because I'm weak, that's it.
That's it. Okay,
between the pair of us, we've extended the straw.
Yeah, go on.
So do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to dip the straw in
it.
And suck one up.
Yeah, I think that's what
you're
supposed to do. I don't know.
Mm. that was fun.
Is that weird?
Yeah, that was fun. Have a go.
Have you got any diseases?
No, that was fun.
Okay,
have a go. Hey, wasn't that fun?
That is weird.
Yeah.
Should we ask Jules actually what
should
you
we ask Jules what
I,
you but I actually quite enjoyed
I would
doing
I'd,
that
I'd
to
go
be
for
honest
that. Yeah, I, interesting.
That was the most
and,
fun I've had
strawberry
today.
Bit yeah. Strawberry
oh it's very mm-hmm. Strawberry so Jules,
tell us all about it.
So Pop a Ball is a range of bursting juice bubbles. You add these juice bubbles to your favourite cold drinks, such as cordials, cocktails, and Prosecco. You just add a little spoonful into your drink, and then you suck it up with a telescopic straw that is provided in each pack.
So, let me get this right. I've got my glass of Prosecco, and I put, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 of those in there or something, which looks amazing.
Yeah.
But then when I drink my Prosecco, am I supposed to drink the balls or?
Yeah. So you would drink your Prosecco, get some balls in your mouth, and then bite them.
And then bite them. Because actually, you could just swallow them straight away, because mine just went down straight away.
That's what I did when I...
Yeah. Jules, hold on, just try and keep a straight face. Or you could just, you know, you just drink them as you're drinking your normal drink.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, do what you want with these balls, but they taste delicious.
How on earth do you make these? This is incredible. Do you make them yourself, or do you buy them, or have you got somebody to make them for you?
Yeah, so we're based up in Newcastle, and it's a thing called spherification. So you're mixing sodium alginate and then with the juice, and then it reacts with calcium, which is like a salty solution, and then it makes like a jelly outside.
So where are you selling them at the moment?
So Poppable products are available nationwide in Lakeland, Fenwick stores, Selfridges, lots of garden centres, delis, all over the place.
Selfridges, Fenwick, Lakeland, you're doing very well then.
We're doing all right. You can also get them on our website, which is poppable.co.uk. We also sell really nice gift packs with alcohol as well.
Okay. And in terms of shelf life, they're about 6-9 months or something?
Yeah, that's right. It's minimum 6 months delivered to a retailer.
So you've got a strawberry flavour here. Do you do any other flavours, or are they just strawberry?
Nope, we do 9 flavours. We've got like strawberry, passion fruit, peach, blueberry, all sorts. Then we've got party packs as well, with lots of different straws in and different flavour bubbles. So yeah, we've got a lot. One pack retails about $3.49, and you get at least 3 to 6 servings out of it. You only need 1 teaspoon into your drink, so it can go around a whole bottle of Prosecco, no problem.
So get on the website and get that in when the girls are going out next time. Yeah. Good for you, Jules. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Well, it was great.
Popper Balls was really brilliant.
Yeah, Jules was lovely. And the Miss Miller, the marshmallows, she's just cracking,
isn't
she?
Oh, great, wasn't it?
She's such a lovely lady, and they're doing so well. They're a really nice product. So we like Miss Miller's marshmallows.
Yeah, because Miss Miller, if I remember correctly, came dressed in...
looked fabulous.
Yeah, in a kind of
1940s
outfit, yeah, along with the marshmallows. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, they're really good. Mm. Popper Balls, though, I quite enjoyed that. It was quite interesting, and we managed to keep a straight face all the way through the fruit.
Well, I'm not sure entirely about that. But
yeah. Fruity as well. Jerome's definitely going to succeed, isn't he? You can tell.
Yeah,
he's a
very impressive young man. Yeah.
Mm. And again, my favourite, I think, of all was just understanding about saffron. It's an incredible natural product, really. And you forget until you get really good saffron how it can transform a dish.
Mm.
Obviously they're talking a lot about Persian dishes, but gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. So try and get some expensive saffron, use it sparingly, but it will transform dishes.
Absolutely, and I was not aware that you could get any other saffron other than the yellow stuff.
Yes, but although it's called black, it actually still gives it that beautiful golden colour when you cook
it. It was actually goldeny burgundy, wasn't it, in real colour?
It's lovely. Yeah. So that was the Speciality Fine Food Fair 2016 at Olympia. As you know, Paul, we had so many lovely people. We're going to do just one more special.
Hey,
next
why not?
Week.
There's some really interesting people we met.
They were great.
We did have loads of fun doing it as well, didn't we?
Yeah, my stomach struggled after eating such a sort of mix of things.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, we're at the Food Entrepreneur Show on the 27th, 28th and 29th of September at Excel. So we'll be going through that whole thing again. And if anybody's got anything that's really innovative, interesting, different, especially around the gadgets.
Gadgets, we want gadgets.
Yeah, we've had a few gadgets.
Yeah.
Then get in touch with us. And if you just go on to Twitter at Food Talk Show or onto our website at foodtalk.co.uk, you can learn how to contact the producers if you think you've got something amazing for us to talk about. We want something weird and wonderful, don't we?
We do. Yeah, yeah. Some spaghetti twirl. Automatic machiney thingy or something.
Well,
surprise us. What have you got?
Anything.
What have you got? We want food gadgets.
But interesting technology as well.
Yeah.
There's some good tech stuff.
Yeah.
And we love great personalities like Miss Miller and Jerome from Fruity. So, if you and Philip, yeah, with the Chinese sources, doing some great stuff. So yeah, contact us. Tell us about your stories.
It's going to be fun. What's the date of that again?
It's the 27th, 28th and 29th of September at Excel Food Entrepreneur Show. There's a big takeaway food innovation section as well. So if you're in the trade, it's an interesting one.
I could get a kebab one, aren't I?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Let's go for some healthy stuff and let's look at some gadgets.
Cool. Yeah, gadgets. We want gadgets. Anyway, I think that's about it for another week.
That's great. And final speciality fine food fair special next week. Looking forward to that.
Be fun. Thank you for joining us on the Food Talk Show. You've been listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. We'll be back with you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.